All right, listeners, today we're diving deep into some archaeological discoveries that have caused quite a stir. We're talking about those fascinating finds that connect to the Old Testament.
Right.
Specifically, you brought us sources about the Tel Dan stele and the Taylor prism.
Yeah, these artifacts really make you feel like you're on an archaeological dig yourself.
I know, right? It's like we're uncovering hidden secrets from the past.
And what's so amazing is how these ancient objects can challenge our whole understanding of history.
They really do force us to rethink what we thought we knew, huh?
Yeah, they really do. I mean, they offer new perspectives on events we thought were settled.
Okay, so let's get into it. Let's start with this Tel Dan stele. It was discovered back in the 90s, right?
Yeah, 1993 to be exact.
So what exactly is this Tel Dan stele? What am I picturing here?
Well, imagine you've got this fragmented stone monument. It's like a giant puzzle piece.
Okay.
And it's covered in an ancient language called Old Aramaic.
Whoa, ancient Aramaic.
That's the Tel Dan stele and its discovery. It was huge, monumental, you could say.
I bet. What made it so important?
Well, it contained the first inscription ever found outside the Bible that mentions King David.
No way. King David, like the King David.
The one and only. Or, to be more precise, it mentions the House of David.
Okay, House of David. So like his dynasty, his lineage.
Exactly. It's acknowledging a whole line of kings descending from this legendary figure.
You know, when you say legendary, it makes me think about all those debates about whether King David even existed.
You're right. There were some serious doubts floating around in scholarly circles back then.
So I can only imagine how this stele shook things up.
Oh, it did. It completely turned the tables on those who were claiming David was just a myth.
I bet there was some serious head scratching going on when this thing turned up. Did anyone try to say it was a fake?
Oh, absolutely. You always get that with big discoveries like this. Some folks claimed it was planted by the excavators themselves.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah.
Like some kind of archaeological conspiracy theory?
Yeah. Some even whispered about elaborate forgeries. Anything to discredit the find.
Wow. It just shows you how powerful these discoveries can be.
Yeah.
They really challenge those deeply held beliefs.
That's it, exactly. It's like those artifacts are forcing us to re-examine our assumptions about the past.
Okay, so drama aside, what does this Tel Dan stele actually tell us?
Well, in a nutshell, it talks about this victory, a big victory by an Aramaic king, probably a guy named Hazael.
Hazael, all right.
And this Hazael is bragging about taking down the kings of Israel and, of course, the house of David.
Oh, so it's a victory inscription, like some ancient trash talk carved in stone.
Exactly. He's basically saying, I crushed them. I ended their dynasties.
So wait a minute. If this stele is talking about the downfall of a dynasty in Israel, isn't there a different story in the Bible?
Yeah.
Didn't Jehu, like a different guy, destroy the Omride dynasty?
You've got a good memory. You're absolutely right. The Bible attributes the destruction of the Omrides to Jehu, not some Aramaic king.
So what's going on here? We've got two completely different accounts of the same event.
Right. And that's where things get super interesting.
So is one of them wrong? Or is there some way to make sense of both of them?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is.
And to answer it, we need to remember that ancient historical writing, well, it wasn't always about being perfectly objective.
Okay, so maybe it's not about one being right and the other wrong. Maybe it's about understanding that they're coming from different angles.
You got it. It's all about perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it like this. You have two people who witness a car accident.
Yeah, okay.
They might both give slightly different accounts of what happened, even though they saw the same event.
Right, they might focus on different details.
Exactly. One might remember the speed, the other, the sound of the impact. It doesn't mean one is lying.
It's just different perspectives on the same event.
You nailed it.
Okay, so how does that apply to the Tel Dan stele and this whole Jehu versus Hazael thing?
Well, let's look closely at how the Bible describes Jehu's role. It focuses on Jehu, for sure. He's the main player in destroying the Omrides.
Right.
But the language, it hints at something bigger, maybe even a conspiracy. Like, there were others involved behind the scenes.
Oh, so maybe Hazael was part of that, this Aramaic king from the stele.
That's a very strong possibility. He could have been working with Israelite factions, maybe even with Jehu himself.
Whoa. So both accounts could be true. In a way.
That's the beauty of it. It's like we're piecing together a puzzle using evidence from different sources.
I love that analogy. It's like historical detective work.
Exactly. And sometimes those seemingly contradictory narratives can actually give us a richer understanding.
Wow, this is blowing my mind. And we've only just started. You mentioned another artifact earlier, the Taylor prism.
Oh, yeah, that one's a doozy.
You have to deal with that one.
Well, if the Tel Dan Steel is like finding a missing puzzle piece, the Taylor Prism is like reading an ancient king's diary.
Ooh, a king's diary. That sounds juicy.
Oh, it is. Full of boasts and battles and a whole lot of royal ego on display.
Okay, I'm hooked. Whose diary are we talking about here?
This one belonged to Sennacherib, a powerful Assyrian king who ruled in the 8th century BCE.
Sennacherib. The name rings a bell.
Well, he's famous for laying siege to Jerusalem in 701 BCE. He's a pretty significant figure in biblical history.
Ah, the siege of Jerusalem. That's a big deal if you've read the Bible. It's described in dramatic detail in the books of Kings and Isaiah.
Exactly. And that's what makes the Taylor Prism so fascinating. It gives us Sennacherib's side of the story.
Okay, I'm on the edge of my seat here. What does Sennacherib have to say about this epic siege?
Well, he basically brags about capturing 46 Judean cities, and he claims he trapped King Hezekiah in Jerusalem.
Whoa, trapped him.
Yeah, he uses this vivid image saying he shut him up like a bird in a cage.
So that's pretty consistent with the biblical account, right? Both mention the siege of Jerusalem and Hezekiah being trapped inside.
True, but there's a really interesting detail that Sennacherib doesn't mention.
What's that?
He's weirdly silent about what ultimately happened to Jerusalem.
Really?
Yeah. He brags about getting tribute from Hezekiah, but he doesn't say whether he actually conquered the city.
Hmm. Almost like he's trying to gloss over something.
Right. Like maybe he wants to downplay the fact that he didn't actually achieve his main goal.
So it's possible that while he might have won some battles, he didn't win the war, so to speak.
Exactly. And you wouldn't want to put that on your giant stone prism for everyone to see, would you?
Definitely not. It's like those people who only post their most flattering photos online.
Huh. That's a perfect analogy.
So it sounds like we need to take Sennacherib's account with a grain of salt, right?
Absolutely. It's a reminder that even official historical records can be shaped by the author's own agenda.
It's like reading a press release instead of a news report. You have to read between the lines.
Precisely. And that's why having both the biblical account and Sennacherib's version on the Taylor Prism is so valuable.
Yeah, it's like having different camera angles on the same event.
Exactly. By comparing and contrasting them, we get a much clearer picture of what really went down.
This is incredible. We're not just talking about ancient stones anymore. We're talking about how history gets written.
It's all connected.
This deep dive is already exceeding my expectations.
Stay tuned. We're just getting started. It's almost like Sennacherib saying, hey, look at me. I'm so powerful. I made Hezekiah pay up. But he leaves out that tiny detail of having to turn around and go home empty-handed. He didn't actually conquer Jerusalem.
It's like that friend who boasts about winning every argument online. But
right.
They never mention that all their sources are like fake news articles. It's all about appearances, isn't it?
Exactly. It makes you wonder, how do we reconcile these two totally different versions of the story? I mean, what really happened during the siege of Jerusalem?
All right, let's put on our historian hats here.
Yeah.
How do we even start to piece together this puzzle?
Well, remember when we talked about Jehu destroying the Omrides, how the Bible hinted at a bigger conspiracy?
Yeah, I remember.
I think we can use that same approach here with Sennacherib and Hezekiah in 701 BCE.
So we shouldn't just assume that one side is telling the whole truth and the other is lying.
Right. It's more nuanced than that. They're both emphasizing different parts of this complex event.
Okay, that makes sense. So in Sennacherib's case, he focuses on the tribute, but leaves out his failure to capture Jerusalem. That omission speaks volumes, right?
Oh, for sure. It suggests that, yeah, maybe Sennacherib won some battles, but he didn't achieve that ultimate goal, conquering Jerusalem, getting rid of Hezekiah. That's got to sting a bit, right?
Makes sense. No king wants to be remembered as the guy who couldn't take down Jerusalem, especially not a guy like Sennacherib with all his ambition. But then there's the Bible and how it focuses on Jerusalem's miraculous survival, God intervening and all that.
Right. And that definitely has its own slant, too. It's not exactly objective, right?
Right. But you said earlier that ancient historical writing wasn't always about objectivity. It was about conveying a specific message.
Exactly. They were trying to reinforce beliefs,
yeah.
You know, boost the authority of a king or a whole dynasty. It's all about shaping the narrative.
So both accounts, they've got their own spin, their own way of presenting things. It's like two people describing a movie, right?
Go on.
One gets all caught up in the action. The other talks about the character's motivations.
Perfect analogy. They're both talking about the same movie, but they're drawn to different parts, and neither is wrong.
And when we understand those different perspectives, we get a deeper appreciation for the event itself.
Exactly. We see those human motivations, the political pressures. We even see the religious beliefs that were at play.
This is seriously changing how I think about history. It's not just memorizing names and dates. It's about understanding the stories behind the stories.
That's what I love about archaeology and historical research. It's about uncovering the human story with all its messiness and complications. It makes it real, you know?
Absolutely. So we've got these two artifacts, the Tel Dan Stele and the Taylor Prism. They both back up parts of the Bible, but they also throw in these curveballs, these discrepancies.
Right.
What does all of this tell us about the way history was written way back then?
Well, it tells us that we can't just take things at face value. You got to be careful. Those ancient historians, they were working in totally different cultures and political situations than us.
Right. They had different goals, different audiences. Even their ideas of truth were probably different, right?
Absolutely. So it's not just about getting just the facts. It's about understanding the whole context. Why did the author write this? What were they trying to get across?
So we need to read between the lines, consider what's not being said, and recognize that even the most official sounding account is biased in some way.
That's it. It's like those ancient kings. They were the original spin doctors. They knew how to control the narrative.
They wanted to make sure they looked good for their people and for posterity.
Exactly. They knew how powerful a good story could be.
Which is why we, as modern readers, need to develop our own critical thinking skills, right?
Oh, absolutely. We can't just accept everything we read or hear, especially when it's presented as factual.
So instead of getting lost in the weeds of figuring out who's right or wrong, we should focus on understanding those different perspectives.
Right. You got it. It's about embracing the complexity, accepting that we might not have all the answers, and being open to learning more, always questioning.
This has been so eye-opening. It's like we've got this backstage pass to the ancient world. We're seeing how history was staged, how it was presented.
I love that. And with that backstage pass, we can engage with history in a whole new way. We're not just reading about it. We're interpreting it. We're part of the conversation.
So if we accept that ancient history was often about making a point, not just presenting the bare facts, how does that change how we look at history in general?
Well, it makes us more critical readers, more discerning. And that goes for all historical sources, not just ancient ones.
So we should question everything.
Not everything, but we should question our assumptions. Look at things from multiple sides and realize that even the most authoritative accounts are influenced by the time they were written, by the people who wrote them.
It's like those kings, they weren't just writing history. They were crafting their legacies.
They definitely were.
This has been an incredible deep dive. Thank you so much for taking us through all of this.
My pleasure. And who knows what other mysteries are waiting to be uncovered? What other insights are hidden in the past?
You're right. We've barely scratched the surface.
Oh.
But before we wrap up, I've got one last question for you. If we take this idea of understanding bias and perspective and apply it to today's world.
Okay.
Think about the news or even social media.
Yeah.
What kinds of critical thinking skills do we need to navigate all that information?
That's a really important question, you know, especially these days when we're bombarded with information from all sides.
It's like, how do we even know what to believe anymore?
Right. And I think, well, one of the key skills is understanding that everybody has a perspective.
Okay, yeah.
They've got their own lens they're looking through, right? Whether it's a news website or someone on social media or even just a friend sharing an article. We've got to think about what might be shaping their message, their biases.
So we all need to develop our own, like, internal BS detector. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. We can't just accept everything we read as fact, especially not when it's presented that way, all objective and stuff.
And part of that BS detection, it involves looking at the source.
Right.
Like, who's giving me this information?
Exactly. Yeah. What's their track record?
Yeah.
You know, what's their agenda? Do they have a history of bias? These are all good questions to ask before you hit that share button or let yourself get swayed by something you read.
And it's not just about the source, right? We also need to look at the information itself, evidence they're using.
Oh, absolutely. You nailed it. Is it credible? Is there another side to the story? It's about asking those tough questions.
So it's about being skeptical, but not cynical, right?
That's a great way to put it. You don't want to be dismissive, but you also don't want to just swallow everything whole. You know, the truth, it's usually complicated.
Yeah. And there isn't always a clear cut right or wrong answer.
Right. It's more like we're all detectives in a way. We're gathering clues, trying to figure out what really happened.
I like that.
And just like a good detective, we need to be aware of our own biases. You know, our own assumptions.
Absolutely. We all come to the table with our own baggage.
That's a great way to put it. It's about being an active participant in the world, not just passively consuming whatever's thrown at us.
This has been such an incredible deep dive. We started with ancient artifacts and ended up talking about critical thinking in today's world. Who knew archaeology could be so relevant?
It's amazing, isn't it? These ancient stones, they've got so much to teach us, not just about the past, but about how we see the world today.
I feel like we've just scratched the surface, but this has given me so much to think about. I'm going to be looking at the news and everything online with a much more critical eye from now on.
That's fantastic. And remember, the more you question, the more you learn. So keep dipping, keep exploring, and don't be afraid to challenge your own assumptions.
I'll definitely do that. Thank you so much for being our guide on this journey. It's been an absolute pleasure.
The pleasure was all mine. And all of you listening out there, I hope this has sparked your curiosity. History is full of surprises, and the past, well, it's never really past, if we're willing to learn from it.
Well said. So, until our next deep dive, keep questioning, keep learning, and keep those eyes peeled for the hidden clues that the past has left behind for us to uncover.